This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Dr. Jason Staples. You can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. And once again, you can don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Tell a friend. Those ratings really help us. They help us in terms of being able to get good sponsors and so on that are really important for us to be able to get more episodes out. So the more listeners we have, the better ratings we have on iTunes, the more we can do. This is going to be a little bit different than I'd planned, thanks to the hurricane that just came through Tallahassee. I'm going to be doing this preview podcast without Wayne McGahee III, Trey McGahee, who is supposed to be here from the Tallahassee Democrat, but lots of places in Tallahassee are presently without power, and he's going to have to take a pass on our sort of what's becoming a more traditional opening year Fearless Predictions podcast, preview of the year in general. Normally we would have released this earlier, but we've been trying to get everything together with him moving over to the Tallahassee Democrat and lots of things on my end. We weren't able to quite get this to line up, but anyway, I'm going to go ahead and get this out anyway. Many of you will be listening to this either just before the games start on Saturday or after the games have already been played. So some of these things will probably sound a little bit ridiculous by the time that all gets done. But that's the fun of these Fearless Prediction podcasts, getting a chance to sort of make a fool of myself and try to gaze into the hazy crystal ball and do a little bit of divination here. But we'll see what comes out. We've had a pretty good I've had a pretty good run in the past in terms of being able to call a lot of stuff before the year. Last year was probably not my strongest year in that regard, but time for a bounce back. I think this is going to be a really fun year as I've looked at 2016. Pretty excited about what's coming, both for the Florida State and the ACC, and just in terms of the national competitiveness. I'm going to start actually with my projections and predictions for Florida State first, and then in the second segment I'm going to go ahead and get to my predictions for national stuff. So let's go ahead and get to it. A few items just in terms of things that I've heard about this team that I want to get out up front before I get into so much of the projection side. One of which is just in terms of the growth of the offensive line. By and large, you know, you expect offensive lines that return starters, particularly starters that were young the year before, you expect them to take a step forward. And then talking to the sorts of people who get to see these things in practice, this Florida State offensive line is going to be improved. And that's a big deal, particularly in the running game, because last year, Dalvin Cook had to make a lot of stuff happen himself. He was not always able to get to the second level with, say, the ease of someone like Christian McCaffrey, who got to the second level, I think, 54 times last year, untouched, which was the most in the country by quite a bit. And Cook just didn't have that advantage, and yet was still able to make people look silly, which if he's able to get to the second level with this offensive line this year, those numbers could be better, which, again, if he's able to stay healthy and all that, it could be a pretty crazy good year for Cook. But the real question is how much better the offensive line is going to be. And that's really still an open question. I've been told that in practices this season so far, the offensive line has still been pretty up and down. They've taken turns alternately looking, you know, pretty good, and then they've had times where the whole offense has bogged down and has just not looked very good at all. And one of the things that has come up about this is that in some places there just really hasn't been a whole lot of improvement. I mean, Wilson Bell is who he is at this point. He's not a whole lot better at right guard, if he's better at all at right guard, than he was last year. And nobody has really taken that job from him at this point. I mean, earlier in camp, Cole Minshew was getting a lot of reps at that position, but he's yet again been sidelined with more concussion-like symptoms. And, you know, at this point, you got to start worrying about the kid because he was out last year with concussion problems, and now he's having it again. And at a certain point, you start to wonder whether or not he's ever really going to be able to stay on the field. Plus, once he started getting off the field again, the kid gained quite a bit of weight back again. And now Minshew is, in addition to having, you know, being held out and all that, he's gained a lot of weight back and that he had dropped to be a more effective player. And at that weight, he's just not going to be competitive for that position. So now you've got a true freshman, Landon Dickerson, actually in that spot, in the number two spot behind Wilson Bell. Now, the interesting question for me is how long before Landon Dickerson actually takes that starting role. This is something I didn't anticipate coming into this year, partly because I expected Derek Kelly to take that right guard spot, and partly because I just didn't think as good as even Landon Dickerson's tape was coming out of high school. I didn't think he'd be ready that quickly, especially not being an early enrollee, but he has really looked very good in practices so far. And it's very possible that, you know, he could be in the starting lineup at some point later in the year. It's also possible that Derek Kelly, as he continues to get healthier and so on, takes that job as well. But right now, you know, I'm not sure how much improvement we're really going to see from that right guard position. And again, Wilson Bell was not bad last year. He just was not an elite player, was not at the level that what you hope you might be able to get, given the kind of depth and athletes Florida State has overall on the roster with this offensive line group, which is the best and deepest offensive line group that certainly has been on campus since Jimbo Fisher has been on campus. And I would say is the best group going back at least to 2002, when you had that group, those opening holes for Greg Jones, which featured Brett and Todd Williams. Rest in peace, Todd. And Montre Holland and Antoine Marambo and then Ray Willis and Alex Barron as well on the also as a reserve. You had a group there that was just about as good as FSU's ever had. That's the last time FSU had anything close to this level of talent on the offensive line. And this group is deeper through the 2 and 3 deep than that group was. Then also you have the right tackle position, where there also has been improvement, partly because of the addition of Rick Leonard, who is definitely an improvement over Brock Rubel to this point. I'm not sure how much Leonard is an improvement over what Derek Kelly was at that position last year when he was healthy, which was only for a game or two. So, you know, I'm not expecting Leonard to be an elite player. And some of those who've watched practices and I've exchanged some details with some of those who also have some other sources who watch practice. The general consensus is that Leonard is really aggressive. He's a tremendous athlete, and his athleticism can kind of compensate for still being pretty raw technique wise at times. And particularly in the running game, he can be a monster at times. That he can really do some things in the running game at times, and then other times he just whiffs, which is what you would expect from a guy with less experience. And then it's in the passing game that you start to see the technique be a problem sometimes, that he'll give up some plays in the passing game, give up some pressure in the passing game because he's just not quite there. But he's going to get better over the course of the year, and he's continued to get better through camp. And part of the reason that he's starting right now is that they've seen continual progression, and they're just going to expect him to get better as the season goes along. What that says is I think you're going to be more likely to see more I formation with a tight end, or have some support with a tight end outside of Leonard, at least especially early in the year. And you'll see more attention on running the football, especially on that right side, than, you know, just straight drop back passing, particularly early in the year again, because, you know, it's what the offensive line does best. This offensive line is better run blocking right now than pass blocking. And then, of course, you know who you've got on the left side with Rod Johnson. You're not going to get a ton better at this point. He's in his third year. He started for part of his first year and then all of his second year. At a certain point, he is who he is. And then left guard, Kareem R., who is, at least right now, there's some doubt as to whether or not he's going to play against Ole Miss, but also, again, a solid player, both in the run and the pass. Not an elite player, but a very good college guard and a guy who has NFL potential. It's a pretty good group. And then Alec Eberle at the center position, they really like, and they feel like they can do a lot with him at the center position. But again, there's some doubt as to whether or not he'll be on the field against Ole Miss. And again, he's had some concussion problems. Now they're talking about it being, well, you know, it's not concussion problems, it's migraine problems. And if they're telling the truth on that, I mentioned this on the last podcast, I'm not sure that's comforting, because for me, I had severe post-concussion migraines for 2 years after my worst concussion. Mentioned before, I've had 6 concussions. After my worst concussion, I had debilitating migraines that would show up after certain types of so much overstress or exertion or not eating for long enough, that sort of thing. And I would get a debilitating migraine that was ultimately, seems to have been related to the major concussion that I'd had, prior to those migraines developing. And eventually they went away, but this is before we really knew a whole lot about concussions, but we still, you know, are really in our infancy in terms of what we know about brain injury. But that, I'm not sure that's comforting if we're going to say that Eberle, well, you know, it's just migraines now. Well, yeah, it's migraines with a guy who's had a history of concussions. So, I mean, is that a good thing? I mean, is this just, you know, basically post-concussion syndrome? Like what I had. And that's something, you know, I think that we're going to have to monitor. And behind him, you have Corey Martinez, who's a good player, but is out for the first few weeks with that sprained MCL. And that means that a true freshman, Andrew Bocelli, is maybe the starter against Ole Miss. We've talked about this a little bit already. One thing I didn't get a chance to talk about on the last podcast is basically that Bocelli, when he first came in, you know, he was looked at as a guy that would be depth initially and, you know, basically work his way onto the field eventually, maybe, was seen as a bit of a project, a guy that could, you know, hopefully become something that, you know, especially with those bloodlines, could become a viable player down the line. And since he got on campus on the spring, the level of improvement that he's made has just been shocking, really. I mean, in talking to one of my sources, he was saying that Bocelli, first of all, is so smart that his presence on the field helps both guards next to him, who are older than he is, but he knows the assignments, he understands things so well that he's able to help them while he's out there. So that's a very unusual for a true freshman. But this kid is that smart. He's so smart that he's able to do that stuff, and he does stuff automatically. And he's also a big kid. I mean, he's over 300 pounds. He's 6'4". He's a big kid that can anchor a little bit better than some of the smaller freshmen that Florida State has brought in the past, where they needed to add a lot of weight at that center position. Thinking again of Hofeld and Eberle and some of these guys that have come in a little bit lighter in the seat than Bocelli. So, you know, they feel like at least he's a guy that they can win with in the middle at this point, even as a true freshman. And the reason, and that's why, by the way, he's ahead of Bavion Johnson, who was the number one center in the country coming out of high school. It's not that Bavion Johnson isn't good. It's just that he's got a lot longer to go before he's actually a viable option in the middle as a center. And actually, this kid has stepped up and has made that level of improvement. I mean, even coming into camp, Rick Trickett was sort of meh about what, you know, they might be able to get from Bocelli. And then after 2 weeks of camp, he's been excited about this kid, which says a lot about the level of work that this kid put in over the off season and the kind of mentality he's brought to the team. One of my sources was saying that he thinks Bocelli is going to be a major team leader for the next 4 years, that this is the kind of guy that you've got to have in your locker room. So a lot of really high praise for a guy that a lot of people regarded as, sort of an add-on to a really good recruiting class for Florida State. In any case, you've got Kelly, who probably will end up sliding in on that left guard side if R doesn't play. And Kelly, I think, is one of the most important players on the Florida State offensive line, partly because of his ability to play four positions. He's listed as the backup left tackle, which shows you that right now they're not real happy with what they've got at left tackle behind Rod Johnson. He can play right tackle. He started there previously, and he might be the first right tackle off the bench in front of Rubel at this point if Leonard went down. And he's probably the first guard off the bench at both guard spots. I mean, this is a guy that really can play a lot of things, and that's even at this point without him being fully recovered from that knee injury. So all of that goes to say that really Florida State's success this year offensively, and what we're going to be talking about in terms of predictions is going to center on the success of that offensive line and where Florida State, what kind of performance Florida State's able to get from that group. So let's go ahead and dive in terms of what we can expect and what I expect from this year. I'm going to start with individual numbers from players and sort of give it, this will give a sense of more or less what I expect. I'll go ahead and start with Dalvin Cook. I do not think Dalvin Cook wins a Heisman this year. I don't think he's going to get enough carries, first of all. I think he'll, last year he had, 228 carries for 1,600 yards or so. I think this year he's going to be in a similar area. I think he's probably going to actually have a little bit fewer carries, around 200. I've got him around 220 carries, which is about 16 carries a game through 14 regular season games, totaling up maybe about 1,700 yards. Now, again, I'm projecting these numbers through 14 games, which gives a hint in terms of what I'm expecting from Florida State in the regular season, because I'm including an extra game in the regular season. But I think about 220 carries for 1,700 yards and about, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 touchdowns is about what I expect from him. And overall, from the running game at Florida State this year, I expect them to go over 2,500 yards rushing this season, which is pretty dang good. I mean, last year, over 14 games, they had 2,187 in terms of rushing on the year. In 2013, they had about 2,800. Actually, I'm looking at it now, 2,844 yards on the year. And I think Florida State's going to be in that range in 2016. They'll be pretty close rushing-wise to the numbers that they put up in 2014, with maybe a little higher yard per carry average than what they had in 2013, where they averaged 5.63 yards per carry, mostly on the strength of Devontae Freeman averaging 5.87 yards per carry. I think Cook's going to be in the 7-plus range again, and you'll see Florida State, I think, easily clear 2,500 yards total as an offense rushing, which is, again, that puts them in pretty good shape and sets then DeAndre Francois up for a pretty good year. And I think his numbers wind up being fairly comparable to what we saw in terms of EJ Manuel's numbers in 2012. I think you'll see probably a little bit more downfield in terms of what Francois is able to do compared to what EJ was willing to do in terms of throwing downfield and being aggressive. But I think Francois probably puts up, you know, the Florida State quarterbacks. That is, if it's Francois or McGuire, Francois, let's say Francois misses a game or something with injury or whatnot. I think we ultimately see, though, Francois as the starter puts up about 3,500 yards, averaging about 8.5 yards per attempt-ish for somewhere around 28 touchdowns and 12 picks. Maybe 15 picks, you know, somewhere in there. Somewhere in the low to mid-teens in the picks area, in the high 20s. Area on touchdowns is what I'm expecting from him, which I think would be a pretty good year. Now, the question is, when do those interceptions happen? You know, I referenced DJ Emmanuel's 2012 performance, and he had a pretty dang good year, good enough year to get drafted in the first round. Although, again, on this podcast, we had talked about how that probably wasn't, he probably shouldn't have been drafted that high based on projections to the NFL, but he had an excellent season. It's just that there were a few really, really rough patches, particularly against NC State and Florida, that cost Florida State two games or helped cost Florida State two games. And the question is, will, say, DeAndre Francois' turnovers or rough patches be sort of more spread out to allow Florida State to compensate for those in those specific games? Or is he going to have more concentrated struggles in one or two games that then cost Florida State wins? That's the real question. I think the way that this will be answered is if Francois can get through the first few games, still basically playing pretty even and steady football, then he's going to be fine later in the season. That with more experience and confidence as the season goes, he's going to be in pretty good shape. But it's going to take him having a decent start for Florida State actually to meet their goals this season. I think it's obvious who the most likely top receiver on this team is going to be. I think Rudolph is going to wind up with 70 plus receptions, 1,100 plus yards. I think he's going to go well over 1,000, probably 8 to 10 touchdowns I think this is a guy who, one of the things that I was told, and you know, obviously he's getting a lot of attention right now for his decision to sit down with a kid who was sitting alone at lunch at a school, which, I mean, I think he's a little bit puzzled by how much attention he's gotten for that, because, I mean, that's why he went to the school, and he just happened to find a kid that was sitting alone. But good for him, and good for Florida State that they're getting perhaps a little bit of hyperbolic attention for something good at this point. One of the things that one of my sources in the program has said is that Rudolph is a guy who has consistently gotten better basically every day. He comes to work every day. And, you know, he said Rudolph was better in the spring than he was last fall. And he's better in camp, and he's better coming into this season than he was in the spring. He just keeps getting better, and he's consistent and plays with purpose all the time. And I think that's going to make him really critical to this offense and critical to Francois, who can trust him. So I think his numbers are going to be comparable basically to what Rashad Green put up in 2013. 70 plus receptions, about 1,100 yards, and so on. He's a steady guy, probably not going to create as many big plays as some of the other guys might be able to, but he's the guy that is going to be the security and going to be the number one on this team. And I think, you know, he can basically fill that role. I think we're going to see a host of other receivers with a lot of catches below that. Or with, you know, sort of medium level catches. I don't think we're going to see, you know, Kelvin Benjamin. I think it was 2013, if I remember right, it was 78 catches for Green, and then 54 catches for both Kelvin Benjamin and Kenny Shaw, and then 33 for Nick O'Leary. I don't think we're going to see 54 catches from the number two guy this year. I think we're going to see somewhere in the range of 35 catches or so from the number two guy, because there's going to be a number of receivers. We're going to see a little bit more receiver by committee as they figure out who can be trusted where, and they do a little bit more shuffling around. I think we're going to see probably 35 or 40 catches from the number two guy. And I'm actually projecting Nooney Murray, to be the number two reception guy on this team from the wide receiver spot. And then I've got Auden Tate with about 30 catches on the year by the end, which comes out to about two catches a game. So I think that's where those guys wind up. And I think the other guy, and I think he may wind up the number two overall receiver in terms of catches on the team, is actually Ryan Izzo. I expect Ryan Izzo to have a big year this year. I've got him down for about 35 catches, which is a little bit higher. Again, Nick O'Leary had 33 in 2013, which again goes to show the kind of offense that I think Florida State's going to run this year, and how important I think Izzo is going to be to DeAndre Francois and his comfort level. This is where, you know, Florida State runs a lot of Houston, which involves an option route from the tight end, and I expect to see him throw that option route to the tight end a lot when they're in a position where they need to have yardage, they need to get, you know, a routine play or whatever. I think he's going to go to the tight end quite a bit in those contexts, just like Jameis Winston did with Nick O'Leary. I mean, O'Leary had 48 catches in 2014. I don't think Izzo's going to have quite that many, because, you know, at that point, Winston was force-feeding O'Leary the ball at times. But I think you're going to see Izzo with quite a few catches, really doubling last year. Now, flipping over to the defensive side, I think, you know, one of the main things that we're going to see this year that's different from previous years in the last couple years is I think this defense is going to get a lot more pressure on the quarterback than they've gotten in recent years. I think Josh Sweat himself is going to have double-digit sacks. I'm not sure that DeMarcus Walker is going to have double-digit again. But again, I think he'll be in the vicinity, maybe 7 or 8, maybe 10. But I've got Sweat leading the team in sacks. And then I've got the defense actually taking another step forward. They had 17 sacks in 2014. That was it. They had 32 in 2015. I've got them. I think they're going to wind up with over 40 this year, a good bit more pressure. And I'm going to project, say, 45 sacks in 2016. Now, Bama had 52 in 2015. So that gives you some perspective on what I'm expecting. I'll say somewhere between 40 and 45 sacks, to which we can all say, thank you, Brad Lawing. And I also think that's going to result in more interceptions and forced turnovers. I was wrong last year. I thought they'd increase over what they'd forced in 2014, where they had 14 interceptions. They had a lot of dropped interceptions last year, and they had a lot of pass breakups, but fewer interceptions than you'd expect off of the pass breakups they had. 2013, they had an absurd 26 interceptions. I don't think they're going to quite equal that. But with the stability in the secondary, with the three corners they can stick out there, last year they didn't have the guy at star that could really cause turnovers, that could create some problems along with the two corners on the outside. They had Ramsey and White, who are both outstanding corners, obviously, on the outside. But once Marshall got hurt at that star position, they didn't really have anybody else. I mean, Tyler Hunter, it was not working. Ultimately, Javian Elliott is a good player. He's still actually lasting a little. He's lasted through the first few rounds of cuts in the NFL, but not these are not elite guys that could sit in that slot in that slot position and cause some turnovers. I think they have that this year with three possible guys that could fill that role. Particularly though, with Marcus Lewis, who I think is going to cause some issues for teams in the slot. And also, you know, I think we'll see Levante Taylor get his opportunities as well against passing teams. Plus, I think Florida State's going to play more teams that are willing to challenge them in the secondary this year than they did last year. They're playing four of the top, I'd say, five or six quarterbacks, arguably, in the country this year. And those teams are going to be willing to take their chances, which I think will result, they'll probably give up more touchdowns through the year than they did last year. But I do think they're probably going to wind up with more turnovers forced than they've had since 2013, which again is going to, I think, be a big deal in terms of establishing what this team's able to do. Now, those sort of stats numbers put out there, looking at what I expect from Florida State's season, I think it's more difficult to project. I think this is a pretty tough team to project. First and foremost, this season basically is going to go as the first six games go. Florida State has to survive against Ole Miss. There are five, you know, FBS teams in the first six games. They have to survive against Ole Miss, Louisville, USF, Miami, or UNC, and then Miami in order to meet their goals. And that stretch of the first five this year is, I mean, that's brutal. I mean, just look at the quarterbacks. And that's one of the things you look at in terms of, you know, what teams can upset you. Well, if you run into a hot quarterback, I mean, look at NC State and all the times that they've beaten Florida State in Raleigh. One of the big reasons they were able to pull those upsets is because of the quarterbacks they had. They had Russell Wilson, obviously a pretty good player. And then they had Glennon, who was also a good player, still in the NFL as well, as a backup. And those guys got hot. So if you're playing against a hot quarterback, sometimes it just doesn't matter how good you are. The hot quarterback is gonna cause you enough problems to beat you if you don't have your A game on the other side of the ball. And that's the real concern, I think, coming into this year, is Chad Kelly can get hot and can be really, really good. Ole Miss. Lamar Jackson for Louisville scored 8 touchdowns last night in the first half. Yes, it was UNC Charlotte, who may be the worst FBS team in the country, but the guy has sort of Michael Vick qualities about him and can cause serious problems. And he had 300-plus yards against Florida State last year in Tallahassee. And that game's a noon game in Louisville, which that's a concerning game. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. USF, I don't think Flowers is going to cause Florida State a bunch of problems, but that's a decent enough team, particularly on the heels of Louisville, that they could, you know, make things a little bit dicey in that game. Then you got UNC, and I think Mitch Trubisky is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think everybody's going to get introduced to him tomorrow. I think everybody's going to be surprised by how North Carolina lost Marquise Williams, who is, you know, statistically a really good college quarterback, and got a lot better at the quarterback position. I think Trubisky's excellent from what I've seen of him on film and also in his in practice stuff, and from what I've seen also in his brief appearances where he's played full games basically in place of Williams in the past, and he's been excellent. And then you got to finish up that stretch. You've got a guy who's projected as high as number 2 in next year's draft. And again, I'm not sure he's better than Trubisky. You've got Brad Kaya for Miami. And, you know, obviously with Mark Richt as the quarterback's coach. And I mean, yes, I know his son is actually the quarterback's coach in title, but Mark is coaching quarterbacks and calling plays down there. The guy knows quarterbacks. He's going to have Kaya playing well. So at some point, you start to wonder, like, how good does Florida State have to be to come through this stretch, even 5-1 against that group of quarterbacks? I don't think anybody else in the country plays four quarterbacks of the level of Chad Kelly, Lamar Jackson, Mitch Trubisky, and Brad Kaya. That, I think, is the best group of four quarterbacks anybody plays in the country this year. And they're four of the first five games, FBS games, that Florida State has this year. So that defense has to be outstanding to be able to handle that. And the offense is going to have to score some points in those first weeks. Because as good as the defense is, some of those teams are going to score points because of those quarterbacks. You can't defend perfect passing games. If you throw the perfect pass and you've got a quality receiver out there, it can't be defended. So the offense is going to have to be good enough to score some points in those first six games. Now, if Florida State can survive, if Florida State's 6-0 coming through those six games, they're going undefeated. They'll beat Clemson, I think. If they come through 6-0 at that point, then I'm going to favor them on Clemson, and I think they go undefeated into the playoff. And at that point, the real question is, do they have to face a Bama team that is actually a little bit more talented overall than Florida State actually is? But the question is, would you favor FSU or Bama in that game? I don't know. But I think they would go undefeated into the playoff if they can get through the first six games undefeated. I'm not going to project that because I'm skeptical as to whether or not all four of those quarterbacks get held enough and whether Florida State is consistent enough on offense early in the year to go 6-0 against that group. I think Florida State probably goes 5-1 through those first six games. And I'm projecting Florida State to beat Clemson in Tallahassee. I just like the way that, again, the FSU defense matches up against the Clemson offense in terms of being able to limit them. It's the one defense that should be able to have some way of limiting that Clemson offense, which is going to be spectacularly good. And I think the Florida State offense at that point in the year is going to be equipped enough to beat a Clemson defense that's not going to be quite as good as last year's. Now, obviously, that's presuming that DeAndre Francois does continue to progress and becomes a viable enough option to make it so that it's not just a runaway in terms of the quarterback position with Deshaun Watson being as great as he is. I just keep going back to Florida State very nearly beat Clemson at Clemson last year when the teams were not quite so evenly matched. So that's where I've got Florida State. I've got them winning the ACC and ultimately making the college football playoff, most likely with a record of something like 12-1. I don't think they're going to go 13-0 in the regular season. Although I think it's as likely that they go 13-0 as they go 11-2, or I'm sorry, 10-2. I think they actually may be a little bit more likely to go undefeated than 10-2. But again, a lot depends on how they come out in those first six games. So that's basically my projection for Florida State this year. I've got one loss, ACC champions. I think that one loss comes to one of those teams in the first six, whether it's Ole Miss, Louisville, UNC, or Miami. I think those are your most likely. I think the other scary game is the one right after Clemson, which is in Raleigh, the NC State game. And I think they're just good enough, and by that point in the year, they may be settled enough at quarterback to yet again be a problem in Raleigh in a real trap game situation. But anyway, I think that's where FSU sort of sits coming into the year. It's possible that they, if they make it through the first 6 weeks undefeated and they do lose to Clemson, they could make the college football playoff even with a loss, depending on how everything shakes out. Partly because of some of the things that we're going to cover now in the second and final segment of this podcast, and that is my fearless predictions nationally. First and foremost, I think it's important to note right up front, I think this is one of the strongest years nationally in recent memory. If Florida State was coming into a year like this back with this group on offense and defense back in 2013, I would have favored this Florida State team to go undefeated. I would have thought this Florida State team would be far and away the most talented team and be ready to probably win the national title that year, maybe with Alabama being a challenger. But I think this year you've got several elite teams that are good enough to be national champs talent-wise. and are going to be difficult for anyone to contend with. Interestingly, I've got it broken down. I think tier one, there's four teams that are better than anybody else talent-wise, and that's Alabama, FSU, Clemson, and LSU. Now, I think the Clemson defense is going to take a small step back just like they did last year. They actually did take a step back from 2014 last year with all the guys they had lost on defense, and it's harder to reload on defense 2 years in a row. So they went from the number one defense to something like the number five or six defense in the country, you know, top five area defense. I think they'll probably be a top 10, maybe top 15 defense, but I'm guessing probably around the top 10 range, yet another little step back, enough to not be truly dominant like a number one defense would be. But the offense is going to be potentially historically good. I'm talking maybe better than the 2013 Florida State offense was, led by Jameis Winston with Kelvin Benjamin and all those guys, with the return of Mike Williams at wide receiver and basically everybody else that matters on that Clemson offense. They're going to be incredible this year on offense. And it's going to take, you know, a really, really good football team to beat them because they're going to score points. But Alabama is Alabama. And people talk about how it doesn't matter who starts at quarterback at Alabama. That's not true. But the difference is Alabama's picking from, what, four or five five-star, four-star recruits? The difference is, yes, their quarterback position may not be set, but it's not a matter of choosing where, oh, we don't have really good options, but it doesn't matter because we're Alabama. No, the issue is Alabama's always choosing from among a bunch of good options, a bunch of guys that were highly touted coming out of high school, guys that do have talent. And once again, they'll do the same thing, and they'll be, yet again, a very good football team. The question is whether they can win their own division, because LSU, that 2013 recruiting class is as good as anybody's, one of the best ever, with Fournette and that group. And the question is, if LSU can get decent quarterback play, then I think they're the favorite in the SEC West. I just don't know that they'll be able to get good quarterback play because they really haven't since Jimbo Fisher left there, since at least Jimbo Fisher trained quarterbacks left there. So those are the four teams, though, that I think are a little bit on a different tier from everybody else. And then after that, you've got a strong tier two, though. You know, Ohio State, Michigan, OU, Oklahoma State, TCU, Louisville, Houston, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Georgia, Washington, Tennessee, Ole Miss, UCLA, and Stanford all have an argument that they could be a contender this year. So I actually think this year is going to be one of the most difficult playoff decisions so far. I think it actually will be the most difficult decision at the end of the year on who gets into the playoff, because I think there's going to be several different teams with an argument. This will be one of those rare years where six or seven teams are going to have an argument, partly because I think you're going to have more two-loss teams. Now, the question is, it's very possible, I think, that you could have four one-loss teams on the year, or, you know, four one or fewer loss teams, which could make this simpler. And if that's the case, then I would guess that those four teams are Alabama, FSU, LSU, and Clemson, at which point it could be that you could. I would not be entirely shocked if at the end of this year you had two teams from two different conferences in the playoff and the other three major conferences were left out. Just because of the nature of who plays whom in the offseason, or I mean in the non-conference, and who has what talent, and sort of where the downs and ups are, it may well be Alabama, FSU, Clemson, LSU in the playoff. I'm not going to project that, but I wouldn't be surprised, because I wouldn't be surprised if the only losses among those groups were to each other, given those teams. That said, I think it's going to be more difficult in the SEC West for both Alabama and LSU to go with only one loss, and I think ultimately, I think one of those teams at least has two, and it's possible that both of them have two because of, again, the SEC West being as strong as it's been. And as for Tier 2, you have a number of those teams that play each other, but I suspect that one of those teams is going to emerge and wind up getting in the playoff at some point. It's possible two of them do. But I think this is if there was going to be a year where two teams from one conference made it into the playoff, it's probably this year. I think that's still a pretty difficult thing to expect, but I wouldn't be surprised, again, if this is the year that happens because of the amount of parity and the number of quality teams this year. Now, looking further around the nation, I think this is the, you know, everybody's talking about this is the year of the superstar running back, and it is. I mean, you look around the country, and from Fournette to Cook and Nick Chubb being back, and McCaffrey out at Stanford, you've got a ton of these guys that are tremendous running backs. But ultimately, I think Deshaun Watson wins the Heisman. I think he was the best player in the country last year. I think people realized that after the Alabama, the national title game against Alabama, and also how he shredded that OU defense. I think people realized that, and I think ultimately he probably wins the Heisman this year. And that's despite what I'm projecting as a loss to Florida State. Now, I'm going to go ahead then through, I'm going to blaze through what I'm projecting for the different conference standings. I think this is difficult, more difficult perhaps this year than it has been in recent years, but I'll give it a crack. I think the SEC, I think I've got Georgia winning the East. I just can't trust Tennessee because of the quarterback situation. I've never been convinced that Josh Dobbs is a top level quarterback. And then of course last night happened. I mean, this still, nothing has changed my mind. I mean, it just confirmed what I saw. Or what I'd seen previously, but I think ultimately Georgia wins the SEC East. Maybe a 3-loss Georgia team wins the SEC East. I think it'll be a close race, but ultimately I think Georgia gets the SEC East over Florida. I think I've got Florida and Tennessee basically 2-3. I wouldn't be surprised if they tied 2-3. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that Florida doesn't go ahead and beat them one more time, beat Tennessee one more time, just because, again, I just can't trust the quarterback. That said, if there is a game that Alabama might lose this year in the SEC, I wouldn't be shocked if it was Tennessee in that rivalry game at Tennessee. I just that might be one that could surprise some people later in the year, but for whatever reason, I've got a little bit of a gut about that, and it's despite, again, Josh Dobbs really not being a passing threat. In the West, I've got Bama, then LSU, and Texas A&M. I think A&M may be the spoiler for somebody, because again, that defensive line is nasty. I think the second year under Chavis there defensively is going to make them better, and I think actually. The question is going to be how much better Texas A&M's locker room situation is. If they get that under control, then there's a lot of talent there. Those receivers are filthy. And they could cause a lot of problems for some teams and maybe pull an upset of a Bama or an LSU. But either way, I've got Texas A&M number 3. And then Arkansas and Ole Miss and Auburn 4, 5, 6 in Mississippi State in the basement. I've got the SEC champion Bama over Georgia, but I barely favor Bama over LSU, so it could just as easily be LSU over Georgia. I think Bama or LSU win it. Then I've got, in the Big Ten, I've got Ohio State winning the Big Ten East over Michigan. I think it's going to be a close race. Ohio State's youth is an issue, but I just think they're, at this point, a little more talented still than Michigan. And I think with JT Barrett at quarterback there, I think by the end of the year, Ohio State winds up beating Michigan yet again. I think Michigan State winds up a distant third, Penn State in fourth there. I think Nebraska wins the Big Ten West, followed by Wisconsin, and Ohio State wins the Big Ten Championship. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan did it in Harbaugh's second year. I just suspect that Ohio State is a little bit more talented and still manages to survive one more year on top of the Big Ten. Pac-12 North is tough. I've got Stanford over Washington and Oregon. And then in the Pac-12 South, I've got UCLA narrowly over USC, Pac-12 champion being UCLA. I think it's just on the strength of Josh Rosen and a UCLA team that's going to be battle-tested at this point and probably won't have as many injuries as they did last year. I think the Big 12 is going to cannibalize itself. I think both the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are going to cannibalize themselves. I don't think anybody out of either conference comes out with fewer than 2 losses. And in the Big 12, I think TCU and Texas go 1-2. That's my surprise. I think Texas winds up higher in the Big 12 than anybody expects. Texas, with Baylor's recruits from this year, ends up being 1 or 2 in the Big 12, followed by the Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, by the 2 Oklahoma teams, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, with Baylor in 5th. That's what I've got in the Big 12. And again, you could convince me to sort of shuffle those up just as easily, because I think basically through West Virginia in the Big 12, there's a lot of parity. And I think West Virginia is going to get a couple scalps on the year that will surprise some people because defensively they're better than people think. I think in the ACC Atlantic, both Florida State and Clemson wind up 7-1. I think FSU gets the tiebreaker there and winds up winning the conference. And in the Coastal, North Carolina wins the Coastal. I don't think they'll go undefeated in the Coastal like they did last year. I've got them losing a couple games, but ultimately nobody else is better than 5-3 in the Coastal as I see it. And you basically have a group of teams below them with Virginia Tech, Miami, Pitt, Georgia Tech, all in that 5-3 or 4-4 range. And I think Florida State beats North Carolina in the ACC championship to get a playoff berth. As far as playoff teams, that's a real question. I'm projecting, as of right now, I think the college football playoff is going to be four of the following six teams. I'll just say that. Four of the following six teams are going to make the college football playoff, and only one of the Big Ten teams really is going to be a possibility. But I think it's going to be Bama, Florida State, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, and Michigan that ultimately wind up being the real playoff contenders this year. Question is, I think OU may beat Ohio State early in the year, but that may wind up being the only loss for the Buckeyes, and I think OU goes on to lose a couple. That, interestingly, could affect who gets in terms of whether or not a second conference does with a non-conference loss from Ohio State. So, you know, this will be interesting. But I ultimately think that the playoff winds up being something like this: Bama, Florida State, Clemson, and Ohio State, if things shake out more or less like I suspect. But again, LSU could be in Bama's place. It could be one of Florida State or Clemson. LSU could be in there along with Bama. And I think Michigan, if they, you know, progress and Ohio State doesn't take a step forward with all that youth, then, you know, it could be Michigan in that place. I really don't know that anybody else sticks out to me as a playoff contender this year, just because of the combination of schedule and the degree of parity and the number of quality teams in the country this year. So I think it's going to be interesting, and I'm really looking forward to this opening weekend because I think it's going to say a lot. I'll reevaluate a lot after this weekend. I do think I'm going to make a concerted effort this year to do some picks at the end of my preview episodes. The last one before the weekend. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. One thing that I do think is going to happen this first weekend, I think the ACC is going to go 3-0 against the SEC. I think Clemson is going to beat is going to cover against Auburn at home. I like that game for Clemson to cover. I think Florida State covers against Ole Miss, although it's not going to be by a lot. I think they'll narrowly cover that 3.5 or 4, whatever it's at now. And then I think North Carolina wins straight up against Georgia. Again, I think Mitch Trubisky is going to be surprisingly good for those who haven't paid attention. And I think UNC is ultimately going to win close over UGA in one of the better games of the week. So I think that's one that I like in terms of not only against the spread, but straight up. So those are three picks on the week. Otherwise, let's see, going down my list, I don't know what to think about whether Bama covers against USC. I'm inclined to think that they do, but I'm not gonna. That's one I wouldn't pick just because of the possibility that it's low scoring enough that neither covers, or that they don't cover even though they win the game. I think one game that's really interesting, I do think Texas A&M beats UCLA. They're favored by 3.5. I don't think I'd bet on that, but I think Texas A&M probably beats UCLA there. Hosting UCLA in that game. I like Texas A&M to get a win because of that defensive line against the UCLA offensive line. I don't see any others that really stick out to me in terms of what I would take against the spread this week. I would be really tempted by Texas straight up over Notre Dame, but ultimately I just can't trust Texas enough to do it. So those are going to be my picks for the week. Those are my fearless projections for the year. It's going to be interesting, a really fun year this year. I think there's going to be a lot of parity, a lot of quality teams at the top this year. It's not parity toward the middle so much as parity toward the top. And again, you've got multiple elite teams where if they do wind up in the playoff, we're going to see some really, really good playoff games. An exciting year. It's good to have football back, college football back, for after what seemed like a really long off season. But that'll do it for us here. Let's go ahead and enjoy the games on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. This has once again been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm Dr. Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.